This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, joining us is Mike Clay, one of the best in the business at ESPN when it comes to all things fantasy. So, Mike, week two, can you believe it? Somebody pinch me. Week one was so much fun. I'm hoping that it will be just as much fun this coming Sunday.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we wait so long for the season to actually start, and it feels like it takes forever, and then the season just flies by. So you just got to sit back, enjoy it, not get too caught up in the rush of things, because it certainly is a crazy busy time. But yeah, I'm excited. Football's back.
All right, let's dive into it. And first and foremost, let's start with some of the news from today in regard to players. Okay, not that this is news, but I think we're anticipating Michael Thomas, the Saints, to be out for, from what I understand, a few weeks because of a high ankle sprain. And as we know, Michael Thomas, he was drafted in the first round of most fantasy football leagues if you were somewhere around 7, 8, or 9. So with him being out, where do you see the value? Do you see the value more so with Alvin Kamara being more involved in the passing game, maybe Emmanuel Sanders stepping up? Or is it Jared Cook, who very well could be utilized big time in the red zone? Where do you see the value right now?
Well, remember, Michael Thomas handled around a third of their targets last season, right? So it's not going to go really to one or two guys. It's going to be spread around quite a bit. But look, I think maybe, you know, Alvin Kamara maybe gets one extra target. But again, he had a 27% target share in week one and was terrific. So you're not moving the needle on him very much. But Emmanuel Sanders moves up a peg. Tre'Quan Smith moves up a peg. In fact, remember, Tre'Quan Smith is in his third season. He was a third-round pick a few years ago, and he actually out-snapped Emmanuel Sanders last week. So it's very possible he's the number one wide receiver. So if you're looking for a flyer in a deep league, maybe you have a bunch of injuries, like maybe you drafted Golladay and Michael Thomas and you need some help, he could be a deep league flyer and certainly a DFS option. Sanders, I think, is certainly a guy you could start this week as well. And then you mentioned Jared Cook. That's definitely a good name. Remember, this guy's been a top seven fantasy tight end the past two seasons, was very much disrespected in fantasy drafts this year. But again, 23% of their targets went his direction last week. That's a huge number. And yeah, he could definitely see an extra target or two here this week. So definitely like some pieces of this offense. I don't want to go crazy, but I think Sanders and Smith are viable starting options. Cook as well. And obviously Alvin Kamara.
All right, another wide receiver, Kenny Golladay. From what I understand, he's going to be out for the Detroit Lions due to a hamstring issue. So TJ Hockenson really impressed me in week one. I know a lot of people were apprehensive in regard to where they were going to draft him because of the injury issues that he was dealing with. But, you know, I see a big uptick in his value heading into week two. Curious, who do you think... I hate to phrase it this way, right, Mike? Like, who benefits fantasy football wise with the fact that Golladay won't be active or attractive?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and again, he was out last week as well, so we got a kind of an idea of what they're going to do. And you know, we saw the rookie Quintez Cephas was on the field for 32 pass plays, ran 32 routes in that game, played 57 snaps. That was second behind only Marvin Jones. So he's basically his de facto replacement. He's just going to fill in on the outside. And he actually handled a 24% target share, which was highest on the team. I mean, again, his first NFL game as a fifth-round pick led the Lions in targets. So he didn't have a big fantasy day, but he's a very, very sneaky option in daily fantasy tournaments, because if that volume continues, he's going to hit on one of those plays and pay off in a big way. So that's an interesting name for sure. You know, Marvin Jones is a must start for sure. Borderline top 15 play in fantasy. And if you're in a PPR league, you can, and you know, again, you're kind of desperate at wide receiver, Danny Amendola gives you a high floor. And by the way, you mentioned TJ Hockenson. Absolutely. I mean, look, he was a first round pick last season. It's his second year. The team is definitely hoping for a breakout, and they're going to need him to be involved as a pass catcher. You know, Jesse James is the two at tight end for them. He's a blocker. So it's Hockenson when they're throwing the ball to the tight end. Definitely think he's a borderline starter in 12-team leagues.
All right. Another guy that is not going to play is Jamison Crowder, wide receiver for the Jets, who, listen, they're thin. To me, Chris Herndon immediately becomes, if he was even a borderline tight end one, because they might not have the best matchup against the San Francisco 49ers. Boy, the target share that I anticipate him to get heading into week two with no Crowder in the lineup for Sam Darnold, I think will be ridiculous. Agree or disagree?
I'm with you, and this especially applies to Daily Fantasy because Herndon is extremely cheap, so you can basically punt the tight end spot and throw him in there, and you have a guy who last week played 38 snaps and handled a 21% target share, which is a pretty high number for a tight end. So you're right. Without Crowder underneath, he's going to be one of the primary targets in this offense, if not the primary target, but there's a lot of value here, honestly. I think Rashad Perriman, a lot of people soured on him last week and cut him loose, and he's on a lot of waiver wires out there. I'd grab him. You know, it's a pretty good matchup here for the Jets. I mean, you know, we saw the team they're facing obviously struggled with injuries and is a little beat up there. So I think that with the Richard Sherman out, Perriman perhaps takes advantage. Remember, 49ers are traveling all the way across the country to New York, so Perriman could be kind of a post-hype name, if you will, this week. So keep an eye on him. He's keeping Daily Fantasy. Chris Hogan as well. He's going to play a huge role. And you mentioned Chris Herndon. Yeah, I think he's a borderline top 10 start in fantasy.
Let's focus on some running backs. Philip Lindsay is dealing with a toe issue, expecting a heavy dose of Melvin Gordon this week, but not a great matchup going up against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who held Saquon Barkley to 6 yards. Unbelievable. If you have Melvin Gordon, what do you do with him this week?
I'm starting him. If I, you know, like you said, it is a tough matchup, but also no Philip Lindsay, so it should be the Melvin Gordon show. I have him 16th on my board. That means I'm starting him if I got him. And again, the efficiency might not be great, but the volume should be terrific. You know, if he sees 5 or 6 targets, that one surprised me, and he may see 15-plus carries as well, with only Royce Freeman as the other viable back in what is pretty much going to be a run-heavy offense this season, or at least a run-first offense. So it should be, again, it's going to be Melvin Gordon playing a huge role this week without Lindsay. If I got him, I'm starting him.
Last but not least, in regard to just breaking down the injury report heading into week two, and we know that Marlon Mack is out. From what I understand, Michael Pittman is dealing with a toe issue. Something happened today at practice. Jack Doyle might not go. How do you envision the Colts matchup against the Minnesota Vikings? I do believe the Colts win, but you know, how do they win? What are some of the players that you think are going to be really important in securing a win for the Colts this week?
Yeah, this is a really big game, right, for these teams. You don't want to start 0-2, and Minnesota got embarrassed last week by the division rival Packers, and the Colts really got embarrassed losing at Jacksonville, which never should have happened. They're a much better team on paper, so a lot of motivation for both sides. But as for offensively, I mean, Jonathan Taylor, the sky's the limit, right? We know he has a ton of talent, a ton of skill. He has the size and speed to be a feature back in the NFL. And look, on top of him taking over a bulk of the carries here with Marlon Mack out, he also had 6 targets last week, and that was with Marlon Mack playing right around. He played 11 snaps in that game. Taylor had 6 catches. Marlon Mack had 6 catches in one game in his NFL career so far. I mean, that tells you how much Phillip Rivers likes to throw to that running back position and that Taylor has that skill set. So he is definitely a borderline top 10 play going forward in fantasy. If you drafted him, you got a discount at this point. You want to start him each and every week. And, yes, Jack Doyle was ruled out. Trey Burton's on IR. So, you know, again, if we're going super deep here, maybe at least start 2 tight ends or daily fantasy. But Mo Alie-Cox is finally going to get his chance to shine. He's been like a deep sleeper for years now. We're going to get a look at him as the starter here for the Indianapolis Colts. But again, that's for deep leagues. If you're in most leagues out there, you're going to start Taylor. You're going to start T.Y. Hilton. You're going to start Paris Campbell in 12-team leagues after he looked pretty good in his 2020 debut last week. And then Nyheim Hines, I think, in PPR leagues, still a fine option. He's not going to score most weeks, once, let alone twice, like he did last week, but he's going to catch enough passes that he's going to be on the PPR radar, starting radar, going forward.
All right, I've got you for another 2 minutes, so let's really quick, give me like one deep sleeper in each position. So quarterback-wise, who do you feel is flying under the radar this week, heading to week 2, that you feel could put up some great fantasy points?
Let's see here. That's I was going to say Tom Brady, but I don't think he's flying under the radar, right? So maybe that's too obvious. But look, he is facing Carolina, so it's probably worth a mention. I think probably after what we saw last week, people maybe are thinking about putting him on their bench. But he did have three touchdowns in that game. And the Panthers' defense, I mean, they just totally renovated in the offseason. They're basically starting from scratch, and they're going to struggle this season for sure. So I think if you're unsure on Brady, I feel pretty sure in this matchup. I would want him in my lineup. And that's even the case without Chris Godwin, who's not going to play in this game. But I would still want Brady in my lineup. It's just, I just think they're going to light up the Panthers.
At running back.
Let's see here. We did... it looks like James Conner is going to play, so we can't go Benny Snell. I wanted to go Benny Snell.
I love Benny. I still like Benny Snell this week, even if Conner plays. I still like him.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. I think there you have enough options at running back. It's too risky to start him because, you know, all indications are that Conner has a long leash, and it doesn't seem like he should, right, especially after Snell outplayed him, but they seem really committed to him, and that kind of bothers me if I have Snell on my bench. So, I'm a little more nervous than you are, but I think you hang on to him because at some point I think Snell's going to get some starts. But how about go back to the James Robinson well, right? A lot of volume. He played about two-thirds of the snaps for the Jags last week as their lead back. He didn't get as much hype this week as I expected, but I do think he's a borderline RB2 in 12-team leagues and certainly should be considered for your flex spot, but definitely interested in James Robinson.
All right, and last but not least, give me a wide receiver.
Let's talk more about Paris Campbell, right? He's going up against the Vikings, who lost 43 fantasy points to wide receivers last week. Of course, they played the Packers, and they're not going to have their number one corner from that game. Cameron Dantzler's out with an injury, so they are really hurting at that cornerback position. It's very young, very inexperienced, and obviously those guys haven't emerged as competent NFL corners yet. You know, obviously that helps T.Y. Hilton, that helps Paris Campbell, maybe Zach Pascal if you're getting real deep here. But Campbell, look, he was a second-round pick last season, was hurt as a rookie, but he's back, he's healthy, he's going to carry the ball, maybe help on returns, be a huge target for Phillip Rivers out of the slot. He's going to be heavily involved. I don't think that was a fluke what we saw in week one. I think this kid's going to be the real deal, so he's a borderline top 30 play for me. Campbell, Hilton, you want both of them in your lineup against Minnesota this week.
Love it. He's Mike Clay, one of the best in the business. You can see his work all over ESPN and their fantasy site. He's got a great, probably it's my favorite article to read each and every week, Mike, and that's your wide receiver quarterback matchup. So much appreciate your time here on Week in Wager. Thank you so much, my friend. Good luck in week two.
Anytime. Good luck this weekend, Anita.
If I had $1 million...
Hey, this is Brett Musburger, and you're listening to Anita Marks on The Weekend Wager.
Hour two here, Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. And without further ado, I know we spent the first hour talking NFL, specifically the Jets and the San Francisco 49ers, but we're switching our attention to what's going on here in our own backyard, and that's at Wingfoot hosting the U.S. Open. David Berman joins us. He oversees all our gambling content at Chalk, ESPN, Daily Wager. David, from what I understand, you're sitting pretty right now, my friend.
Yeah, it was a good day. It's survival of the fittest out there on that golf course today, and we were talking off air. I do a little snake draft, six golfers. You got to get three, make the cut to continue. My first two picks were Thomas and Patrick Reed. So, yeah, Thomas and Reed both up there. Two of only about half a dozen players that are under par. So at least in the pool I'm in, I'm sitting pretty. How about you?
Well, let's do this. Let's go through the leaderboard and talk about some of the guys that are at the top of leaderboard and what the odds are right now heading into Saturday. As you said, Patrick Reed and DeChambeau at the top of leaderboard, 4 under for Reed, DeChambeau 3 under. Patrick Reed to win this is 5-1. DeChambeau is +450, just FYI. I played golf today with a caddy from Wingfoot. And he was telling, and Reed was his pick. He was on our podcast, On the Tee with Anita Marks. He was on our podcast earlier in the week, and he picked Reed on our podcast. He said he's been a caddy at Wingfoot for since 1985. And he said just the way that Reed draws the ball, I guess you need a really great draw in order to score well at Wingfoot, just the way that the course is designed. And so that's why he picked Reed. He actually said the way the course is designed, and you know me, I picked Dustin Johnson. I went chalk here. Mm-hmm. And he had said that the way that the course is designed, that Dustin Johnson, the draw is not really, his best shot in his bag. And so this course doesn't necessarily play to the shot selection for DJ, but it does for Patrick Reed, and he's at the top of the leaderboard. So I might throw some coin, 5-1, David. I might throw some coin on Patrick Reed heading into the weekend. What about you?
I like Patrick Reed, and I give total credit to the guy you played with today who picked Reed. Obviously, full credit for picking a guy. Like I said, I got him in the second round of my draft, so I liked Reed coming in. He said he liked Reed because of the draw he has, and it's obviously a good play by him. But I will note today, in fact, if you watch Reed's round today, didn't hit many fairways. He missed a lot of fairways, and it was scrambling that did it for Reed today. He has 50 putts through two rounds. Like, I had that today in 18 holes, and he had that through two rounds so far at a course where putting is almost near impossible. You're seeing these pros three putt all the time. He's getting up and down. I mean, look what he did out of the bunker on 18 to get a birdie today. Second shot was wide, and then he hits the bunker shot to within 5 feet, did it again on 17. His short game today was on fire. And if he does use that draw to get on some fairways, then your guy and me and you are all going to be right. Because Reed right now he's playing the course as opposed to the course crushing the players. If you looked at whether it's Spieth or it's Tiger or Phil or on and on and on, the amount of people who shot, 10, 11, 12 over par, Patrick Reed ho-hummed his way to a 70 today. He was 4-under yesterday, and he is playing the type of golf at this course that could end with him having the trophy on Sunday.
Again, David Berman joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. And again, I'm just following the leaderboard right now, and I just want to share some odds that are out there. You mentioned Justin Thomas, JT. He's tied for third. He's 2-under. He's 4-1 to win this damn thing.
Shoffley, he's even better than Reed. His odds are shorter than Reed's, and he's two shots behind.
Yep. Shoffley is even, so he's tied for 7, and he's 9-1. A guy that hits the ball extremely well and loves to perform in these type of big stage scenarios, and that is Brendan Todd. He's tied for 7th and as well at even, and he's 9-1 as well. John Rahm, he's +1, tied for 13, and he's 12-1. I might put some money on him as well, David.
Yeah, he's only 5 back, and he's a guy who survived today as well, only shooting 2 over. Any of the guys, I think, that played today in 70, 71, or 72 or better, I think have a realistic shot because they came the course on a day where the wind was blowing, the pin placements were tough. So Rahm survived today. If you go even further down, I know you mentioned it a minute ago, Dustin Johnson, even par today, only a couple of shots back. Might be too far away. Maybe it doesn't play the draw as well, like your buddy said. But, for a guy who bogeyed 2 of the first 3 holes yesterday and looked like he was going to be out of the tournament before it started, shot a 70 today. Same thing with Daniel Berger, 3 over yesterday, 70 today. Berger and Johnson, what are their odds?
Berger is 80-1 to win this, 8-1 to finish in the top 5, +335 to finish in the top 10. And who was the other golfer you were interested in?
Dustin Johnson. Dustin. Tied with Berger at 7 back.
Dustin is 28-1 to win it, +400 to finish in the top 5, +125 to finish in the top 10. Here's my question to you is, because in handicapping this, right? Like, it's so, like, a player like Dustin Johnson or Rahm could get hot, mm-hmm, and just play otherworldly golf where a number of the other guys like DeChambeau could just wet the bed and just totally blow it up and, you know, be like plus seven on any given day, right? In the next 2 days, mm-hmm. on either a Saturday or a Sunday. Like, that is a realistic situation. This is a much different course, therefore a much different weekend to handicap. I'm curious, how far back is too far back for you, David?
I probably wouldn't go past that plus three. And even then, I think the plus three is a little too far back because there's 20 guys above that. But when you're looking at Berger, Johnson, and even Rory McIlroy, who played awful today, those guys are seven shots off the lead. Of course, Patrick Reed at 4-under, you never know what, you know, between Reed and DeChambeau, everybody else is 2-1 or even. I think it's too far back. And this is the type of course where no one's going to go out there and shoot a 64 or 65 like you see at the PGA or even occasionally at the Masters. So it's going to be hard for one of these guys to do unworldly. They're going to need to do unworldly and have some other people come back. So I probably wouldn't go past the plus threes. But there are some names down there, like I just mentioned, Berger, Johnson, and McIlroy, who you wouldn't be stunned to just stick around and shoot 68 over the next 2 days and 2-under, 2-under, and all of a sudden they're 1-under for the tournament and they win. Webb Simpson, 2-over par, 5 back. Hideki Matsuyama, even par and 4 back. You mentioned Shoffley. The one thing I'm looking at, Anita, with handicapping, and I alluded to a minute ago, is a lot of people played well on Thursday. The course was gettable. Patrick Reed spoke about it.
It was too easy on Thursday. Let's be honest. It was too easy on Thursday, David. Come on.
Right. Right. So what I'm looking at is I'm throwing Thursday out because it was too easy. It played too easy. The course is not going to play that way. Sure, right. Players did well, but Fowler, Sia, other guys, Tiger, Sia, guys who played well on Thursday and didn't do it on Friday. Rory, great on Thursday, 6-over today. So I'm throwing Thursday out, and I'm also looking at guys who played bad today and throwing them out. So I'm not going to bet on Rory. He was 6-over today. But guys who played the course well in the hardest conditions, Reed, DeChambeau, I mentioned a few minutes ago how Dustin Johnson was even par today. Billy Horschel was even par today. Berger was even par today. Watson and Matsuyama were 1-under today. Not many guys played this course at even or better, but if today was an indication of how the course might play over the next 2 days when the wind is supposed to be even worse, watching how these guys played today is what is going to figure out where my pocketbook is going to go over the next 2 days. So I like the guys who came out in bad conditions and said, you know what, I'm going to let my game speak for itself. Reed did it. Johnson did it. DeChambeau did it. I'm going to have a hard time picking a guy like Rory, who was 6-over today in hard conditions. The course is not going to get any easier, and Rory's not playing good ball. So guys like him, Fowler shot 7-over today. Westwood shot 6-over today. So you see guys who blew up on the course. I don't expect them to turn around and all of a sudden shoot 3-under par when they shot 5 or 6-over today. Other guys, Adam Scott. The list goes on and on. Fowler, I said, was 7-over, and Cantlay was 6-over today. So you just throw those out the window, and you look for guys who played the course well over both days.
Again, David Berman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Just a few guys to name that did not make the cut. The cut was at plus 7, by the way, which was really surprising to me. Again, I was playing with a bunch of dudes today, and throughout our entire rounds, we were trying to, like, at one point the cut line was plus 3, then it jumped to plus 5, then it jumped to plus 4, and then it ended up at plus 7. But, you know, Justin Rose, Gary Woodland, Fleetwood, Tiger, plus 11, dude. Phils, Jordan Spieth. I know that the Bear, Chris Felica, didn't he have both Spieth and Tiger not making the cut?
Yeah, the predictable that he was going to have Tiger miss the cut, but he also had Spieth miss the cut as well. And maybe it's a conversation for another night. But what happened to Jordan Spieth? Like, this is 2+ years now of just horrible golf out of this guy who's won 4 majors. Like, what has happened to him? Can't find his game, and even the break
between the ears.
Dude, this guy's not just, you know, finishing second in a major. The guy's missing a cut at 14, 13 over par. That's pretty ugly, and that's the way his game has been. if you look at the metrics, I was actually looking in the draft that I'm in. I was like, maybe a fifth or a sixth round pick on Spieth, you know, 40th player taken. And I looked at his metrics, and I mean, the triple digits, every single one of them. It's like, you know, you don't expect to see Jordan Spieth next to last on strokes gained, anything, more or less all of them. It's been a rough year for him.
Yeah, I think it was last year. I was golfing with some folks that were in the know that said that he had just hired a psychologist who was actually traveling with him to a few tournaments and was with him at the tournaments. So from what I understand, what's happening with Spieth is you know, mental. But let's be honest, you and I play, we've played before. We play often. It's really, you know, it's really the game. The game really is, it's a mental game more than anything, right?
It's absolutely mental. And obviously you and I aren't professionals, but it is mental. I was in a tight match today and I screwed up and threw a ball in the water, lost the match, and then parred the last three holes because the pressure was off. That's what happened. You par the last three holes when you lose the match. And, you know, why didn't I do that four holes ago? It is mental. And these guys are at the grandest stage. They're on national TV. They're usually playing in front of large audiences. But, yeah, I mean, to see some of the way, and that's why we love the national tournament of the U.S. Open, because you get to see guys like Tiger and Phil mess up every once in a while. It's fun to watch that, because you and I both know we do it all the time.
Hey, before I let you go, because then I'm on for another 45 minutes, I am going to dive into more NFL talk leading into week two. What's your favorite play this week heading into week two for the NFL?
My favorite play, it was in the column that was out today on Chalk. My favorite play is Seattle -4 versus the Patriots. And mm-hmm. I don't say that as a homer Dolphins fan, but I did watch every single play of last week's game. And whereas the Patriots came out and surprised some people and, you know, handled the Dolphins, I was not overly impressed by the overall scope of what the Patriots did. And Seattle's not going to let Cam Newton run for 120 yards, and they're not going to allow the Patriots to rush up the middle for 250 yards like the poorest Dolphin defense did. So I expect Seattle to button it up versus New England and force Cam into throwing a bunch. And, you know, it was efficient, but he wasn't forced to throw that often. And when it's second and two every single time, it's not that hard. I think Seattle defense will come to play, and they'll have a lot. The New England defense looked as good as it did last year. The entire year looked great last week against Ryan Fitzpatrick, and when Devontae Parker went out, the Dolphins had nothing. I watched what Russell Wilson did last week to the Falcons, and I expect Seattle to roll over New England, and I believe it's the primetime game Sunday night.
Fantastic. Great stuff as always, David. I love how you're looking at this leaderboard, specifically more on the scores from today as opposed to yesterday, and that's where your money flow is going to go. I think that's a really, really wise way of looking at this. So thank you for sharing that with us tonight on Weekend Wager. Thank you, my friend. You have a great weekend.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you. Again, this is Weekend Wager brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. We've got a special guest joining us. He joined us one time before. I want to say it was last season. And we enjoyed the segment immensely. And he's back for a second round. And that is Tony Dunst. He is the commentator for the World Poker Tour TV show that are Sunday nights on Fox Sports regional networks. And there's an event that's taking place at Borgata, the WPT online Borgata series, here to talk about it. Tony, welcome in. How you doing?
Hey, Anita. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, thank you for coming back. I really enjoyed our conversation last season. So hopefully this can become a yearly thing, if not more.
Definitely.
So let's talk about Sunday. For folks that are listening right now, whether they live in the New Jersey or even the New York, people can hear us, lower part of Connecticut, northern part of Pennsylvania. What's going on Sunday? If they want to get involved in this poker event, how can they do it? Tell us all about it.
Sure. So the main event of the online Borgata series is on Sunday. It's 1,060 buy-in, and right now it's looking like it's going to be huge. There's already 200 players registered a few days out, which is kind of unheard of. And I would think we are going to see 2 to 3 times that by the point that registration closes. So I really think we might be looking at 6 figures up top. If players want to come down and play, they do need to physically be in New Jersey, but they don't need to be a resident of New Jersey. They can be from anywhere, whether it's in the United States, international, whatever it happens to be. You just physically got to be in New Jersey to play on the site.
Okay. I'm just curious, like, how good of a poker player are you?
These days I'm getting pretty sharp. You know, I've had periods in my career where I was up and down, but, like, you know, especially with the pandemic and everything that's been happening lately, like, I've just sat around my house and studied for, like, a year straight, just playing poker nonstop. So I feel about as dialed in as I've ever been right now.
What do you feel? Give me the 3 characteristics that make a great poker player.
Okay.
So, maybe they're not characteristics, but give me the top 3 things that make some of the best poker players in the world. What are they?
I would say number 1 would be patience, because you're going to deal with a lot of frustrating moments in this game. You're going to lose more days than you win. A lot of things go wrong in poker, and having the patience to think long-term and sort of grind your way through those is going to be really important. But I would say just kind of, you know, along this similar vein of patience is commitment to the long term. Just this belief that, okay, you know, today didn't turn out my way. I don't want to draw too many immediate lessons from that. My eye should be on making the repeated, you know, best decision or the optimal decision over and over, and trust, you know, sort of trusting the process, as it were. And that when I reach the long term, I'll end up being a profitable player. And then as for quality number 3, I would say aggression. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're like an aggressive person who's, you know, hostile at the poker table. I mean that your game, when you're playing poker, has an element of aggression to it, because that's what tends to keep your opponents off balance. If you're a really passive player, it makes you easy to play against, easy to predict. When you start putting chips in the pot, people are like, okay, clearly this person always has the goods because they play so passive. But if you play aggressive, then you have a much more balanced approach to the game, and it makes you unpredictable.
Got it. Again, the upcoming event is the WPT Online Borgata Series main event, powered by Party Poker US Network. Takes place, of course, this Sunday, September 20th. The event is open to any player in New Jersey, which means New Yorkers who travel into Jersey, again, are eligible to play. Tony Dunst joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. So from what I understand, not only are you an avid poker player and fan, but you're also really big into the NFL, and we are heading into week 2. By the way, every now and then, I do like to pat myself on the back. I'm 9-2 so far this season, 2 weeks in.
Damn.
Heading into week 2. Yeah, I went 5-6 on Sunday, hit on Monday night with the Pittsburgh Steelers, did well the first 2 Thursday night games, had Cincinnati. I played a teaser last night, teased Cincinnati up to plus 12 and the over down to 38.5. And I had Tyler Boyd over in receiving yards at 48.5. Tony, he got him in the last series. So trust me,
garbage time.
Yep. I was biting my nails there for sure. But, let's look forward. Since you're really big into the NFL, let's look forward to week 2. What is there a favorite play or maybe top 2 plays on the board that you're eyeing that you really like heading into week 2?
I gotta be honest with you. I have been playing so much poker this week, doing so much streaming, that I have not even looked at the schedule. I have no idea who's playing who this weekend. I couldn't tell you 1 pick at all. So
okay,
talk to me about.
All right, let's go here because a little birdie told me that you're a big Green Bay Packers fan.
Big time.
So the Packers are home at Lambeau Field this week, -6.5. Over-under is at 49.5, and they're taking on the Detroit Lions, which, by the way, out. I'm not sure if you heard this, but Kenny Golladay is out. Also, their secondary is depleted. They lost Coleman. He's on IR. Desmond Trufant is dealing with a hamstring injury. Their number one draft pick, Okuda, is dealing with a hamstring injury. I think this is a perfect spot for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers just to have a field day. This might not necessarily be my favorite play on the board, but if I had to play this, I'm leaning more towards the Packers. I know they play well. I know they have a tough time against Detroit. I get that, but I would play the Pack. The points don't scare me. If it was 7.5, I'd stay off of it. But at 6.5, I might put a little coin on that. How do you feel about this matchup?
I agree with you. I think 6.5 being the key number, at the point it gets to 7, I would really start to shy away, and we'll see if it gets pushed that far in that direction. My only concern about this particular spot is the recency bias. Like, we just watched Aaron Rodgers and the Packers absolutely light up Minnesota, and Aaron Rodgers had his best game in about 4 years statistically. And so my one concern is that right now the hype in the public markets is very much around the Packers and around Rodgers, and I would think that that might move a lot of the action in their direction. That said, 6.5 still, I guess if you absolutely force me to, 6.5 just seems a little too good to pass up. You know, I feel hesitant about it, but I would still take the Packers side. I'm just, whenever a team really, really crushes, and we only got a small sample size of what they're going to look like just from week one, I'm a little gun shy about that recency bias. But yeah, I'm with you here, and just being a Packers fan, you know, come on, gotta be a homer about this one.
And I don't know about the 49.5. I'd probably stay away from the total, but I might put a little coin on the Green Bay Packers -6.5. All right. Well, Tony, great having you on. Really excited. I do have one more question. To have a poker even on Sunday, it's got to be difficult. It's got to be right, because you need to be focusing on poker, but at the same time, it's week two of the NFL season. I don't think a lot of us even thought we'd be here. How difficult is it to balance that and focus in on poker and do what you need to do in order to win your poker game, but at the same time, you can't help but follow what's going on with the NFL. You got to multitask, I guess, right?
You're absolutely right. It does get a little bit tricky to juggle those. And so, for example, I used to play a ton of daily fantasy sports, and I found that I would get so hyped up changing up my teams on Saturday night and then wake up crazy early in the morning, Sunday morning, second guessing myself, having to make all these last minute changes, checking the injury news. But basically, I would destroy my sleep and my ability to focus for the serious poker. So I've decided to retire from DFS for the time being until I, deprioritize poker. And then for the actual games, we're fortunate that the poker tournaments really get going a little bit later in the day. So I can always enjoy that first block of games where we normally have 8, 9, 10 games right in the first block. I'm a little curious why the NFL keeps things structured this way, where it's just so many of the games condensed in that first block, and then there's often 2 or 3 games in the afternoon block. It seems to me they do a little better to even it out. But hey, I'm not Roger Goodell.
No. But you're right. I do seem to feel like the 1 o'clock games, it's like decisions have to be made. So on Sunday, I have 3 TVs in my living room, right? I've got a 75 inch that has the red zone on it. And then I have, a 65 inch that has whether it's the Giants or the Jets, the main game that our local cable network is showing at the time. And then I've got a 50 inch with the game of the day. And of course that time, right? So, what is it? Last week I had, who did the Ravens play last week? They killed them. I forgot who they played.
The Browns last week.
Yeah, there we go. So I had the Ravens, the Browns on that. So, but it's always there's always a discussion, right, with everybody who's here. Okay, well, what game are we going to put on that's the side game, that's not Giants or Jets? What's the side game? And there's always a discussion. But then, of course, then I like how they had the Saints-Bucks game at 4 o'clock. So that didn't, obviously everybody watched that game. That didn't, that, you know, they didn't make that difficult, the 4 o'clock. But you're always right. There's always like maybe 2 or 3 4 o'clock games. Just makes it easier, I guess. I don't know. You know what? I'm gonna text Roger right now. I'll let him know that we're having. I'm gonna let him know that we're having this discussion.
Week is, Patriots Seahawks, right? How could that not be? I don't know if it's a morning game or an afternoon game. But
no,
me,
it's a night game. It's a I know it's a Sunday night game.
Yep, that's good scheduling.
Yep. Anyway, all right, Tony. Always great having you on. Enjoy Sunday. I'm sure you'll crush it. I'm sure it'll be a great event. Hopefully you'll win a ton of money, my friend. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Anita.
You got it.
This is The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.